And now we're very pleased to say that Ted Schmidt is in the building, and Ted Schmidt has a terrific site, theologyinthevineyard.wordpress.com. And, of course, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Phil. And, nice to be here.
I got to remind everybody, you were in with us not so long ago to talk about the book by Claude Lacaille, but also you've been discussing how significant this to change. I can certainly, I'm not a Catholic, but I can feel it, of this new pope. Yeah. And now he's just made a remarkable visit. He went to Havana, then he went to Washington, and he finished off in Philadelphia. Give us an assessment. What kind of message has he been giving? How are you responding?
I think it's quite extraordinary when you watch all of the networks all the time. Pope all the time, everywhere. CNN, Canadian television, all over radio, et cetera, et cetera. And one wonders why. You know, we live in a pretty much of a secular culture, and this man is the head of a church that's been the butt of jokes because of the pedophile crisis. Why would they be looking to this man? Is it mere celebrity culture? Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of it. But I think people around the world, given the gap between the rich and the poor, people are really looking for a moral voice. And this man's life really incarnates the values of Jesus. His commitment to the poor, his very, very abstemious lifestyle, extremely impressive man. Hmm. So he's walking the walk. And people say, well, we can listen to this man. Because he's not remote like Cardinal Ratzinger was. He was a good man, but he really never had a common touch. I'm just astonished that there's just so much coverage of this. I think what he's been able to do, particularly in the States, is change the public discourse. Mm-hmm. I call it a turbo capitalist culture. It's extraordinarily run by the predatory capitalists and economic fundamentalism.
By the way, he uses these kind of words,
yeah,
capitalist, and that's verboten in our culture.
Well, that's
I was even going to ask, it was going to be one of my joke questions, is yeah. He's not a capitalist. How can he be a pope?
Well, that's a good point. So he changes the conversation. There's no doubt about it. And people are astonished. He has this nerve to go into the heart of capitalism and, speak.
And mention that he's not enamored of capitalism.
That the market isn't the be-all and the end-all. Mm-hmm. And all the libertarians and all the friends of Alan Greenspan, who saw the destruction of so much of the U.S. economy with so much greed, they go crazy. But John Paul II said this, the market, it could be valuable if it's not dominated by massive capital, but it never answers two things, the dignity of the human person and the environment. And as you know, this unprecedented encyclical, Laudato Si, on the environment has captured the world's yes. attention. Mm-hmm. So it's quite extraordinary that one man could come and change the conversation and talk about receiving immigrants, talk about the gap between the rich and the poor, talk about the environment. So at that level, it was quite extraordinary. And remember when he talked in the U.S. Congress there, he mentioned four people. And I guarantee you, most of the people—
One of Phil's favorites is going to come up.
Most
here.
Of the people never heard of yeah. two of them. He mentioned yeah. Lincoln, and to talk about the freedom of the slaves— Yes. My particular hero, Dr. King, who was able to put the gospel onto the street and not leave it in a church. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Dr. King is well known. But he also mentioned Dorothy Day,
uh-huh.
The great defender of the radically poor and pacifist in New York City, who was basically scorned or merely tolerated in her life. But now it was up for canonization. But most Americans would never have probably heard about her. But also Thomas Merton, Merton electrocuted in 1968 was this phenomenal monk who prized the contemplative life, but also was a radical anti-war man and had a great impact in the Second Vatican Council. So you can imagine people going to the internet trying to find
yes.
out who the hell is this guy talking about. So he's his own man. People I know who work in Rome say he really doesn't care. You know, about popular acceptance or about offending these massive capitalists that have dominated the world stage for so long. So at that level, I was very moved by this. And of course...
Well, Raul Castro was quite moved. He said, I think I might return to the church.
Well...
he said, I could see myself going to church.
Who said that?
Raul.
Oh, yeah, Raul Castro, that's right.
And, by the way, there's a wonderful photograph of Fidel with him.
Yeah.
Shaking hands.
Well, he's very inclusive, this Pope. You know, you have to hand it to him. And you see, when he went to Congress, he said, Mr. John Boehner, hey, no thanks. I don't want to have lunch with you. I'm going out to have lunch with the poor. Yeah. I mean, this is just unbelievable. Boehner and so many of these right-wing Catholics say, oh, I don't take my economics from this Pope, etc. So
that was came as a shock to
me. Yeah, but you know the big thing, of course, in our world today is Syria and the massive immigration and Germany taking over 800,000 people. Now here's a Pope that comes, and what he's saying is a fundamental gospel truth: there is only one human family. There's not countries. These are just arbitrary laws. I mean, we owe the dignity of every human being. And he said, you're called to defend and preserve the dignity of your fellow citizens. And pony up, take more. This just isn't a European problem. You can't ask all of these poor countries like Greece and Romania, you know, the Germans for many reasons have stepped up and done this. So he privileges the common good, which is a central part of Catholic social teaching. Not individualism, which was unheard of up until the Enlightenment. You know, it was all the people, the common good. And so this is maybe, well, some people are calling him a communist.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he is, you know, a Christian communist. I mean,
well,
that's...
The moment he differs with Washington or London about priorities, if he differs and it's... noted, and he is obviously a communist. Just, you know, that's how they divide the world.
Well,
or he's an Islamic extremist.
Yes. Just, well, people see through that, you know, but people also see that the market ideology has radically failed around the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you have 1 billion people living on a loonie a day, this is Oxfam, you have 2 more billion living on a toonie. You have 73 individuals in the United States who have as much wealth as one half of humanity. The trickle-down theory hasn't worked.
Yes.
You know, and it's getting worse. And all of these capitalists say, well, look, it's raised all boats. Well, it's raised the yachts.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah,
and now in America, they have more private policemen defending these people behind massive guarded houses. And so... is there going to be a revolution? Chris Hedges, among others, is talking about this. I mean, how long can this go, you know, when the work has gone, et cetera, et cetera?
Mm-hmm.
So I did an interview with the CBC when this environmental thing came out. And they said, well, what would you do? And I said, well, if I was the cardinal, it would be very simple. There's 220 parishes in Toronto. I would immediately call them in for a meeting. And I would say the following. You all have advanced copies of this incredible encyclical, unprecedented, that deals with the central moral issue of our time. He puts abortion to the side. He puts pelvic orthodoxy that the last two popes have been obsessed with, you know, homosexuality.
It's the only thing on their mind.
It's the only thing on their mind. And he says the gap between the rich and the poor, and we are burning the planet down. And he uses strong language, and it's so well written.
By the way, I was going to say, one of the reasons we're not to turn to the Pope's comments and the documents you referred to, those are all intellectually sound, deep, well-researched. This is not shallow work.
No.
These are not sound bites.
No, and he calls people like Naomi Klein in. And
he's met with Naomi Klein.
Oh, of course. So getting back to what
should
I would do,
cardinal,
it seems common sense to me. You know, 220 parishes, only one of them is doing anything. And he would – here I'm being the cardinal now. Say, you got 220 pastors there.
Cardinal Schmidt.
Yeah, thank you. You've got now 6 weeks to arrange a series of talks, dialogues in your parish. And you got all sorts of lay people that will facilitate this. There's so much talent out there in the Catholic community. Okay, the next thing that you're going to do, you are all going to take out a membership in one of three groups, the Friends of the Earth, the Sierra Club, or the Suzuki, and get involved. Because if the meeting that you are having in your parish is not connected to a movement outside of your parish, you are wasting your time. Mm-hmm. And most Catholic parishes are very good at Christmas baskets.
Yeah, it's not as though there's no precedent. Edicts are given, right? They say, we want you to work on this, and they do have meetings. So why not on this issue?
And people are fantastic. There's generosity, but it stops at the level of charity, not at the level of justice. We need people to get into the world and go to these movements. The movements are ones that change governments, like Greenpeace has, like Friends of the Earth, etc. So when I went on this CBC show, they played my clip to the cardinal. I said, well, here's what Ted Schmidt says. And, well, kind of a put down. It's nice that he's read it, you know. Come on. Okay. But then he does the Jackie Gleason. Remember Jackie Gleason used to go, hamana, hamana, hamana?
Yeah, yes.
Because what I said was true. Yeah. None of these parishes are engaged. And they haven't been. Why? Because the most talented group of priests have left the church. In my lifetime, working for justice, they've all gone. They got married. And who did they replace them with? I mean, we are really suffering in parishes because we're coming, you know, we have some nice people coming from Poland and Sri Lanka and India, but they bring a misogyny. They don't bring an analysis of the world. They don't bring an understanding of Canadian life or Canadian social teaching. So in my work with students, they all would say to me, what you in the religion department was about, Vatican II, you get inserted into the world. You become an agent of the kingdom of God, an agent of justice. That made sense to us. Then we went out. I meet with my former students a lot, and they say, we went into parishes, nothing was happening. Mm-hmm. And then they drift off from the church. So this is shocking that in the last, from this is the Pew Research, between 2000 and 2010, 30 million Catholics have left the church.
Whoa.
This is staggering. And a lot of it, of course,
doesn't that account for the rise of Francis in the sense that a real crisis? The leaders must have been talking.
Oh, absolutely.
What's going to happen
right
here? How much worse can this
get? The present pope was a runner-up to the last pope. And, you know, these are good men, these cardinals that voted. And they said, it's obvious we have to do a U-turn because there's massive defections. So I was reading my hero, Dr. King. And remember the famous...
He's a Baptist Catholic.
1963. Remember, he's in jail
in
Birmingham. And he says, my heart is broken over the failure of the church to witness. He says, the judgment of God is upon the church as never before. If today's church does not recapture the sacrificial spirit of the early church, it will lose its authenticity, forfeit the loyalty of millions, and be dismissed as an irrelevant social club with no meaning for the 20th century. And that's what it's become.
And this is what Francis is saying.
This is what Francis is trying to bring us back. And when he goes back to Rome, they're going to have this whole colloquium on the family. But it's different in that he has solicited the wisdom of the lay people. This is the big thing that came in my lifetime since Vatican II, the idea of the sensus fidelium. Unless you are talking to the people who are so much more intelligent now than they ever were 50 years ago, you had to get a letter from a parish priest or somebody to study theology. So we lived in a very clerical church. 50 years later, lay people are smarter than the people they're bringing in as priests. There is so much talent there that has not been used, but it's very hard. It's an old institution, as you know. And
200 and how many? 261 popes?
And it moves slowly. People like myself, we're living in a computer age. We have to move faster. And this is what Francis is doing. He's got one lung. He says, I'm not going to live long. So he's naming third world cardinals, you know, with a different vision of what the world is. Because the leadership that we have had under the last two popes has been really bad. And this is what the theologians were saying. They've put in one-dimensional men, gray men, who have been obsessed with whatever Rome said, never listening to the people, not having parish councils where there would be so much talent to change the dialogue. So Francis is doing that, and it's quite extraordinary. What is the effect that he's going to have? This is very interesting. I'm not optimistic. I think that the leadership at the parish level is abysmal. And what's going to happen? More and more Christians are going to get involved. Will they come back to the church? They will. This guy maybe has inspired people to give the church another shot. But if they're going to hear the same old stuff, mm-hmm. and this time with an accent that you don't understand, you know, from Nigeria or Poland, and I don't mind that. I'm a believer in the universal church, but I want people to come that have accepted the wisdom of Vatican II, that we're supposed to be engaged in the world. We're supposed to transform society, not sit back and just worry about the Catholic Church. No, we mm-hmm. are inserted with all the Christian churches, with the synagogues, the mosques, in a transformative mode. Mm-hmm. So look at the witness, eh? He's in the Fiat, the little car. Yes. You know, he washes the feet, he goes out and he's...
He went to a prison, a U.S. prison.
He goes to prisons, and as I said...
He probably noticed there were a number of black prisoners there.
And he probably did, and said, and what a great place to go in the most incarcerated nation in the world
yes.
is to go into a prison. Hey, the Americans are famous for locking everybody up, throwing away the key.
Yes.
But this is what this Pope is saying. Go to the margins. Go to the fringe of society. Goes to those people with no voices. In the Bible, in the New Testament, was the widow, the orphan. Mm-hmm. But find out the prisoners, you know, where is the need? And, you know, he's trying to show an example. Like, I've been at this for a long time, and I have never seen bishops in front of the American embassy when they were bombing the hell out of Nicaragua and El Salvador. I've never seen them involved in any of these issues. There hasn't been much of a witness there, you know, from the institutional church. Inside, many good priests, you know, mm-hmm. that have been privately working and you will see them active, but not much leadership from the top.
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, for us, I mean, of course, you just raised the Vatican II, with John the 23rd, wasn't it? And,
yes.
And then we had a wonderful phenomenon called liberation theology.
We did.
And it really, many people were taken by that and admired it, and particularly in South America. And then it was just like a blizzard came and almost killed all the crops. But here you have back. Does he comment on that historical period? Where was he? What was his take on liberation theology? Do you know his story?
Yes, I do. And, you know, he missed
the
boat.
By the way, this is Ted Schmidt. I want to make sure you know the site, theologyinthevineyard.wordpress.com. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, of course, you know, he was aware. He said he wasn't ready to assume leadership with the Jesuits.
He was in a dangerous place called Argentina.
He was. And he wasn't guilty. I mean, I knew that. He wasn't on the side of the generals. I went to Perez Esquivel, who I interviewed many years ago, Nobel Prize winner, and said, no, he doesn't have blood on his hands. So he was a great man.
A lot of them did, I guess.
Yeah. But look at Phil. We only had 14 years of Vatican II before John Paul came in and shut the door and turned it back into an authoritarian clerical church. Mm-hmm. 14 years. But that spirit was so powerful that you couldn't shut it down. I mean, when I was 21, Germany was 21, said Goethe. You know, when I was 21, the Vatican II hit. And it so inspired me as a young Catholic to move into the world. And it did so many. And all of those priests that I knew, you know, they were phenomenal. But mm-hmm. many of them told me by 1970, the door was starting to close again, and the priests took over. Mm-hmm. But this guy's trying to change it. He still has problems with the woman question. There's no doubt about it. But a pope cannot be seen to contradict the previous pope right away. He's got to wait. That's going to be in another pontificate. But it is a sore problem for Catholics is that we have not accepted the total equality of women at every level of the church, including being pope.
Yeah.
And let's start. Many years ago, I interviewed the great Bishop Alex Carter, and he had tears in his eyes as he was retiring. He told me in a private meeting, I said, Alex, you called for the ordination of married men in 1971, and he had tears in his eyes. And he said, we're stuck. We're just stuck, you know. Yeah. And he said, First Nations, start ordaining men up in the Northwest Territories. You know, the Anglicans have ordained in the last 40 years 50 men. The Catholics, none, because of Rome. And those wonderful bishops, those oblates, have gone to Rome and said, please allow us to ordain married men in the First Nations community. They do not accept celibacy. Rome shut the door.
Yeah.
So maybe this man will be a little open. He's an incredible learner. But I wouldn't get too enthused about the woman question, you know. It is a soreness.
He doesn't treat it in that cold-blooded and nasty way that is – it's obvious this is – he gives you a human reaction. There's that sort of severe cold look that came across the face of his predecessors when these matters were talked about. You could tell that the whip was somewhere in the room, you know.
Well, yeah, you'd be on the margins somewhere. You'd be sent off to the farthest parish. And I've known priests that has happened to.
Now, this is Ted Schmidt, and I mentioned theologyintheVineyard.wordpress.com.
Never neutral,
A Teaching Life, a terrific book. Your recent articles at that site, and I was looking at them, it's great material. I really urge people to go to the site. You use the expression the prophetic.
Yeah.
Oh, and I want to talk about two things at once. And there's also, you say the church got into trouble because of the Constantinian arrangement.
Right.
So could you elaborate on those two
matters? Sure. You know, the early disciples of Jesus were in trouble like he was. You know, crucifixions, living in margins, Roman oppression. They were alive. They were pacifist. But by the time of Constantine took over and the church made an arrangement and jumped into bed with the highest authority. And we've never really got out. Rather than being a ginger group in society that would renovate society with other people, we always like to be on the side of power.
King Constantine.
Yeah. And Mark Ellis uses the expression about Constantinian Judaism. Judaism, an incredible world religion in Israel, has become part of the Constantinian Judaism.
Headache, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So the prophetic, of course, is the great gift that the prophets of Israel gave the world, to stand up to the king, to tell the king that he is naked when he's naked, to pull the curtain like the Wizard of Oz did against the wizard and say, you're naked. And we have always had prophets, and we mentioned Merton and Martin Luther King. These are people who came out of
Dorothy Day. I love the fact that you brought her up. That's great.
You know, they come out of the bowels of the church, you know, and they're often on the margins and on the edge. But the prophet and the prophetic is always alive. It pops up, and this pope is part of the prophetic. It's just an extraordinary time in our Catholic history.
He doesn't take calls from Washington the way those other guys.
No, he doesn't. And he phones people on the margins. Oh, yeah, he picks the phone up and he talks to people that he knew in Argentina, and they don't believe it's the Pope.
You know, it's rather like we just had this phenomenon with Jeremy Corbyn, who wanted to ask questions based on he asked ordinary Brits to give him questions for the prime minister. And the prime minister thought it was funny that we had to listen to ordinary. But it's rather interesting coincidence of personalities that Corbyn should rise to be the leader of the Labour Party at a time when he probably owes the Pope a little bit. Because the Pope is giving a boost to such people.
He does. Have you read this anywhere? The three Catholic Supreme Court justices boycotted the Pope.
Really?
Yeah. They were not in the audience. They're extremely conservative Catholics, and this is really a slap in the face to the direction that Francis is taking.
They are not on the road to sainthood, I can tell them that. Ted Schmidt, it's really a pleasure seeing you. By the way, that website, Theologyinthevineyard.wordpress.com. That's you find the healthiest Catholic writing on the I'll say the globe. Anyway, Ted, thank you very, very much.
A great pleasure to be here again.